This week on the Linux Action Show, Google decimates the competition at Google I.O. We give you the details. Some more questions are cropping up about a Novell buyout. We give you the updates. Then we respond to the feedback we've gotten over our review of Fedora 13. Prepare yourselves. All this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 12, Episode 2. My name is Brian. With me is Chris.
Hey there, Brian.
Hi, Chris.
Check this rocking guitar out. It runs Linux. It's pretty cool. This guy cut
open
a...
Holy crap.
Totally digital. This makes, like, Guitar Hero kind of, I don't know, less awesome.
Guitar Hero is kind of lame anyway. Let's be honest. Do you play Guitar Hero?
Never played it.
Do you play, like, a Rock Band type game?
Never played it.
Where you sit around and pretend to be a musician?
No.
Like, a lot?
But I'd probably play this.
Here's the thing.
Touchscreen.
Playing a game where you pretend to be a musician.
What about this? Because you're still pretending.
Is to being a real musician, like, let's say, using a Mac is to using a real computer.
Right, or...
But it's kind of the same deal.
It's like, you know, when you have, like, a tricycle. It's not really a bike.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a training bike. Like,
yeah.
You get the concepts of bike riding.
But you're not really riding a bike.
Right.
Yeah. But this thing, however...
What do you
think
of this?
Honestly, this just looks totally... You know what? I would expect to see something like this in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure in the future.
In the future.
Where everyone's rocking out and playing like Van Halen songs,
I can even
but
see
on
this
super
in Back
awesome
to the
guitars.
Too.
Yeah.
I can see this in Back to the Future, too. Dude, I can see it.
You know what they should do?
What?
They should combine Bill and Ted and Back to the Future and make a brand new movie that's just like combining the best of the future of both of those.
Wow. I just rewatched that movie.
Good one. Which
Back,
one?
Back to the Future 2.
Oh, yeah. I just rewatched Bill and Ted.
There you go. Yeah. So it's like some sort of...
Everything together with the future and the cohesiveness.
Hey, Brian.
What's happening?
I've got kind of a cool Android pick, but before we did that...
Wait a minute. Did we mention that the thing runs Linux?
Yeah.
We did. Okay.
Yeah, that was my opening.
Because that's why we talked about
that
it.
That is why we talked about it. It is a touch guitar.
The Back to the Future and the Bill and Ted and the Rock Band comments, those were gravy. That's
Sprinkles.
Audible gravy for you, ladies and gentlemen. But
for
it does
your
run
guitar
Linux.
Running.
Hey, do
running.
We know anything about what it's actually running?
Well, we know that it's got a touch LCD screen and that the guy put an AMD Geode processor in there for.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I guess I don't. I was looking to see like if it was a specific version
see,
of
I would
Linux,
love,
like
I would,
damn
yeah.
small or something.
Or Slackware.
right.
I just, for some reason, that should be running Slackware.
Yeah. Oh, actually, you know what? He does put it on here. This blows me away. I didn't...
Holy crap, look at that right there.
It just runs Gen 2.
It's running Gen 2. That's rad.
That is ridiculous.
Wait, it has an Ethernet port?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Does it have Wi-Fi?
Dude, you gotta have Ethernet port.
It's MIDI and Ethernet ports.
Mm-hmm.
No Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Dude, I think that's hilarious.
Right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of cool.
That's gotta be one of the coolest... it looks really cool. Are you kidding? I think it looks great.
I wonder
great.
How well... We need to get like a video of someone actually playing that thing.
I'd love to have a video of this.
I have no idea, but
also,
I think
if somebody
it's
could make
it
like,
awesome.
like a musical bump on
with
that, that would be so
that
cool.
That would be rad.
Yeah. All right, so I want to talk about an Android pick, but before I do that, I want to say hello to the guys over at GoDaddy.
Oh, wait, hold on, Chris.
.com.
I have an inside scoop for you.
You have an inside scoop?
Everyone get ready. You've never heard this before. I want to let you in on an inside scoop. VeriSign, the registry for .com and .net domains, will be raising their prices on July 1st. Can you believe
that? That's like soon.
That's ridiculous. That means our standard $749.com offer from GoDaddy will be going up to what? Who knows? Depends on what VeriSign does, right? So if you want to beat the price increase, you need to act right now. Just use promo code Linux. That's right. That's what we're using.
Yeah, dude.
When you check out and get it, save 10% off of any order. And remember, prices are going up July 1st, so head on over to GoDaddy.com and grab your domain name now. And you probably are going to want to renew it for like 50 years.
Mm, yeah, probably.
Because, I mean, you know, prices are going up, one.
Yeah.
Inflation.
Two. Inflation's big. You got to factor that
either
in.
Either weakening or strengthening dollar, which will either hurt you or help you depending on where you are. And here's the great part. Due to my poor understanding of economics, I'm not sure which would be which for any certain person.
So you better just buy a lot.
So you should just buy a lot.
And use our promo code
Hedge
Linux,
your bets.
LINUX, to save 10% or Linux 20, save 20% on hosting. And thanks to GoDaddy for continued sponsorship of the Linux Action Show.
Fancy pants.
All right, Brian, so I've got to tell you about this Android app. Every week I've been picking an Android app.
Yes,
and
you have.
This next app I've had a relationship with that has been, let's just say, rocky. Okay.
Okay.
We got together. It was going good.
It was nice.
We had a bad breakup. Real bad breakup.
That's rough.
But we're back together now. It started just a little experimentation. A little, but now we're back. We're in a full relationship.
Wait a minute. A little experimentation.
Yeah, you know, just trying things
what
out.
What the heck does that mean? Like you were in college and you're not going to tell this to your kids. You know, none of the details are getting out.
So the program I'm talking about here is Home Plus Plus. Now, everybody's
Home
like.
Home Plus
and
Plus.
I got to say up front, this episode. Okay, everybody. This episode is going to be a little Google Android heavy.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of Google.
Here's
Android
the thing.
Heavy.
I really think this is going to be an episode of the Linux Action Show that 2 years from now, we're going to look back and go, man, that was a sea change. Or we're going to be like, boy, we really got it wrong. It's going to be one of those two things. But this episode is going to be one of those that you can go back to specifically, yeah. And you're going to be able to get that. But this app that is an Android app, it's Home Plus Plus. Everybody knows
Android.
Stay tuned.
At some point later in the show, I will make a statement. And it will seem extreme. And everyone will be like, wow, Brian. Wow.
Right?
That's a little over the top, Brian. You're just trying to be sensationalist. But then 2 years from now, I'll be effing right. And you're going to come back, and I'm going to point you to this episode. And if I'm not, I'm going to not talk about it at all.
No.
I'm going to pretend like I did not say anything.
Walk it
off.
Walk it off.
And it might just mysteriously disappear from our service.
Might just pop out of the RSS feed one day.
I'm just saying, normally this guy over here handles like all the posting of everything and whatnot.
But if one just happened to disappear.
But here's the thing. I still have all the logins to everything, so I can still find that delete button.
And my memory's horrible, so I will remember this conversation.
You won't have a clue, guys.
So this app replaces the whole home screen app launcher deal on your Android phone now, because you can replace every aspect of it. This does that.
Yeah.
It does it, I think.
It looks totally the same, though, to me.
Well, it's a little different. It has these built-in widgets, but the big thing it has at the bottom is kind of like a OS X-style dock.
Yeah.
Or iPhone-style dock. And regular Android doesn't have this. So if you're not on the Android,
gotcha.
If you're not on your home screen that has your phone button, there's no phone button on your Android at all.
Right.
And that's crazy to me for a phone.
That is kind
every
of, that
screen
is kind
I'm
crazy,
at, I should
have
a button that gets me to the phone. Even if I even like on the iPhone, you press that one button twice and you get your phone. On Android, you have to go back to your home screen and press a button, load up an app, and find it. So this always puts it down there. Along with that kind of stuff, it also puts like your status information down there, kind of consolidates it a little bit. I like the way it does that.
And it's working pretty good now?
It originally had not worked for me very well at all. It was very crashy. But now I actually think it's better performing than the factory home screen from Google.
Oh, really? So you put that in there and you actually get better performance now.
And it closes the other one. And
now, have you tried this with the Froyo?
I haven't.
Have you tried the Froyo?
No. But I think
all right,
we'll
get into that.
Yeah. I think this would probably maybe be less relevant on Froyo, because Froyo, for one, adds kind of a little dock phone button. But this still has more features.
So what you're saying is this is only relevant now,
well,
and in like 2 days it's irrelevant.
If I was like an Android 1.5 user,
then it would be interesting.
Or even a 2 or 2.1, but maybe in 2.2 it might
like
not.
Like half
be.
Of all Android users are still in 1.6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to be able to upgrade either.
I know.
It's harsh.
But it's a Home Plus Plus, and then also just I thought I'd give a friendly reminder. AppBrain, I love this site. And
yeah, Brain's awesome.
You guys got to check it out if you've got an Android phone. And then also check out the Android subform.
AppBrain.com.
Over at JupiterColony.com, we've got the Android subform.
Dude, at this point, AppBrain should really be advertising on this show. Yeah. AppBrain.com, what are you doing?
Really?
What are you doing, guys?
Seriously.
What are you doing?
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
That's my Android pick. But you know what? Let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. The top story on the news.
That just warmed my heart.
For this week. Now, this is going to be It was Google Week, everybody. Google Week was here. So it's going to be a Google-heavy episode, but the first story on the news.
Let's start with non-Google.
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 Novell reportedly taking bids from up to 20 separate companies.
Okay, wait, what?
Although Novell rejected a bid from Elliott Associates earlier this year, we covered that like almost out of the gate.
Thank God.
In the Linux Action Show. Everybody's like, what are you guys talking about? You're douches. And it's like, oh yeah, we were talking to somebody, but it fell through. Sorry about that. You know, We reported. We don't force their hand.
You
so
think
now,
about it.
It decides that Novell, it looks like Novell has been continuing to talk to companies. And according to the Wall Street Journal, which generally the Wall Street Journal doesn't report on acquisitions and purchases unless it's absolutely firm, As many as 20 companies have expressed interest in Novell, and Novell has started the process of talking with them. It's unlikely that any one techie company might buy all of Novell at this point.
They're
also,
just going to buy portions of the company.
Equity firms might come in, break up Novell, and sell off different divisions of Novell, including workstation management, directory services, legacy email, so that'd be Novell group-wise, and also their virtualization area. Pretty epic. Now, this isn't for sure.
Huh.
This is the Wall Street Journal saying, based on what they've been hearing, or whatever that means. So this is a Linux Action Show saying, the Wall Street Journal, which should be a good source for business financial things, is saying that up to 20 different companies are eyeing Novell for purchase. What do you think of this, dude? And also,
same thing I thought of it last time.
They say, here's directory services, legacy email, virtualization, and workstation management. Do you know what wasn't mentioned? Linux desktop, or Linux Enterprise Server, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, any of that kind of stuff.
You know what I would love to see? What I would really legitimately love to see? I would love to see Novell sell off everything.
Yeah.
Except the Linux side of things.
I know, right?
Take all that money that they earn from the sell-offs, expand the Linux side of things, and then, honestly, they could then expand their Linux operations on the, both the enterprise and the desktop side and just dominate the earth.
I can see it. I mean, do you think, like, when Novell started out, you're like, whoa, Novell and Linux, that's weird, but it makes sense. They have to transition this network product into something more modern, so this Linux, you know, way for them to go, Linux makes smart. That Linux thing's probably a good choice, Novell. And then it seems like they really ramped it up, and then it just kind of plateaued.
Well, the thing is, it's NetWare. Everyone was transitioning away from NetWare during the period leading up to their jump into the Linux space.
They waited too long.
And then they kept moving away from NetWare, even though they've now got some NetWare transition tools in place. People are still leaving NetWare. So
a lot of them are going to Red Hat when they go to Linux in the enterprise.
Exactly. So while Novell's Linux arm is doing better and better every year, most quarters they've had some significant improvement. You know, it's still there's not really a close tie between that and their NetWare side of things, not as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So why not just sell the whole thing off?
I can totally see that.
And keep the Linux side.
It's a bum. It's a bummer kind of concept to think about. But I almost wonder if I think NetWare lost a lot of steam in the Linux community with that whole Microsoft deal.
Oh yeah.
It made a lot of sense for them. They thought from a business perspective. And maybe it had no impact. In fact, maybe that's the wrong thing to say, because if you look at their sales, almost all of their sales for like that 2008 year, a huge portion of them came from that Microsoft deal.
Yep.
So they maybe you can't really claim it's that, but it just, I don't know.
And honestly,
maybe there's not enough space for two or three big enterprise Linux distros.
You know what? I don't think there is, but if there is, the way to make it work is to do what Novell's doing, is to be the Microsoft-friendly Linux distro.
Right.
So for a Microsoft-friendly shop, you go with Novell. For a non-Microsoft-friendly shop,
that's the differentiator.
Go with Red Hat or Canonical.
But that only gets you so far, because there's only a Microsoft shop's only going to have so much capacity for a Linux environment. So it's always going to be a second-tier platform.
It always is, but second tier can mean as much as 30-40% of your install base.
I suppose, but if Red Hat's selling to the first tier,
10% of your install base at the mega Fortune 500 companies,
it's huge.
That's enough to keep a 1,000-person company rocking full time.
Especially with the way that they're working with Microsoft from virtualization, and as virtualization gets big, I could see it. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is very interesting. I mean, obviously, none of this it means anything until we get it whittled down to just a couple of companies that are talking about it.
Agreed.
And then we'll talk about it some more so we can actually
when we have some details,
understand what each company might want.
Yeah.
Until then, it doesn't matter.
All right. So the next story before we get into all our Google stuff is, do you remember the Pandora handheld console?
Do I ever? This thing has been in most dreams I've had for the last year.
I love the look of this thing. It looks like
The look is great. The specs are great. This is what I want.
I know. It's a 600 megahertz ARM CPU, which is really cool. Then it has a separate 430 megahertz DSP core for like your sound processing and your video processing, all these things. Nice 800 by 480 screen resolution. Wi-Fi, lots of external storage, 10 hours of battery life, and they're actually shipping now. And of course, they run Linux.
They're actually shipping?
They're actually rolling off the production line.
No way.
Yes, sir. That's the story. The Pandora units, these little portable Linux arcades, are now shipping.
And they're great because it's got two little controller nubs on them, the full QWERTY keyboard, the screen is touchscreen with a stylus, which that means It's like the most amazing emulator device ever created, because you can play, because you throw on there something like the touchscreen games, like the Scum games, like the old adventure games,
buddy.
LucasArts Adventures, perfect for that. Of course, my Nokia tablet's already great for that, but what the Nokia tablet misses is all those awesome, great controls.
Here, check out how much this I love these guys. If you look at their site, they have a order status that is about as transparent as
it's great.
Possible. They've just hit the mass production phase of 4,000 Pandora units, so the first 4,000 are being assembled right now. They've already built 1,000 cases in the UK and are going to be shipping another 1,000 to the US.
Awesome.
And assembling the Pandoras is currently in progress, and shipping has started. Awesome order status, guys. Absolutely fantastic. Now, nice and clear.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Now, you know, compare that to like the always innovating TouchBook, which is another, you know, kind of Linux device that I've been lusting after.
This is really more for gaming.
But I mean, I want both. and the Linux always innovating TouchBook, which is that tablet kind of open device. And their status is just like, you know, if you order it now, you might get it in a few months.
Yeah.
And then have like one sentence.
What's
and that's
really
it.
Cool about this little Pandora unit, you know, it's a little gaming thing.
Look at that.
But look at the little connectivity.
Look at those cables.
For your handheld console.
I want that.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. Like,
on the audio version, what you're seeing right now is the back of the Pandora unit has the power cord and then three separate USB devices plugged into it. Mouse, keyboard, and like a little mini USB for charging something. That's really cool.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's a great little Linux toy, and I think the price is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, what they actually end up charging for it?
See, the only prices I can find are the UK prices, but I think if I remember, it worked out to be like $280 US or something like that.
That's not bad.
I'm sure somebody could do the math for us if I can find that. Oh, yeah. Here they also showed a picture of their production line, which is really cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Of them. So they're obviously just super excited, and it's so cool to see them doing this.
Way cool.
I'm really happy for these guys that it's actually shipping.
Yeah, I'm pleased about it too. Because I mean, honestly, we started seeing like the prototypes for this about a year and a half ago or so.
It's been a while.
And you know, I've been talking with them on and off to try and get like a review unit or something in, but they've just never been ready.
Oh, $330 is the US price.
Ooh, that's getting a little steep.
That's not too bad though.
That's getting a little steep.
Yeah.
Come on, man. That's getting a little steep. I mean,
10 hours
you can
of battery.
Pick up, pick up a tablet with comparable like specs for like $200.
And the DS or, is what? What's the DS cost?
$120 or something like that. Or you can pick up like a GP2X for around the same price that plays most of the same games. And in fact, the GP2X Wiz is actually touchscreen. Like the you can actually click on the top left of your screen right there.
That's true. It's on this site?
Yeah. There's one right on that side at the top there.
That's a good point.
There's touchscreen. It's basically kind of the same sort of deal. You know, so it's hard to, and it's 130,
a little slower.
130 pounds or whatever. A little slower, but I mean, not by much. You're just going to be playing emulated games.
Right.
Now, see, the Pandora is the one that excites me. I'll be honest. I'm excited the most about the Pandora.
Yeah.
The price does cause me some pause.
So what's $129 in?
I believe it's about $12.
Yeah, I don't know what 129 pounds is in US dollars.
I think I've said before, I have no concept of the world economy whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't even...
I don't even know how to use Google to figure that out.
So that's our two non-Google stories, but awesome stories. And the Pandora, it looks like a slick unit.
Oh, it looks really slick. And congratulations to the team for getting it out there and getting it in people's hands, because it is a cool-looking device. It's like what a Game Boy DS or Nintendo DS should be, with a cool keyboard and all sorts of awesome controls, and it's just rad looking.
Very cool. So if somebody out there gets one of these, you've got to give us a review.
Oh, yeah.
You got to let us know what you think.
Or just send us a couple.
That
would be fine.
Buy a couple of them and send
also,
them over here.
Yeah, if you could pick up about 12 and send us 6.
Yeah, there you go. Just send us half. We're
that
not
was
greedy.
Math.
We're not
right.
greedy.
If you get 12, send us half.
Yeah. All right, Brian, the next story on the news docket for this week is a series of stories. I'm just going to put it all under
all
a big
right.
Google I.O. umbrella, right? So Google I.O. happened this week.
I'm going to start surfing the internet. What's on I Can Has Cheeseburger right now?
You know, now come on. You must have found some of this interesting because this was...
Oh my gosh, that kitty is adorable. It's playing with yarn and it's like, I Can Has yarn. Oh my God.
So the Google I.O. conference is big because it's really, I think, a huge, huge throwdown for Google in the mobile space. And that is big for Linux because Android.
Dude, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about one thing before we get into any of the Google I/O stuff.
All right.
All right. So Google I/O's conference is their dev conference, basically, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's their big dev conference. They're finally competing with the Microsofts and Apples and with their own big all conference.
Right.
So if you signed up and went to the Google I/O conference, when you first signed up, you got a phone.
You got a Droid.
You got a Droid. They gave you a Droid. Then when you get to the conference, the second day's keynote, they gave you another phone.
A nice phone, too, like the HD, the Incredible, right?
You got two phones for signing up for this conference. And actually, it starts to become a very good value proposition.
Well, I think the ticket was $400.
I know. So at this point, I'm like, well, crap, next year, I don't even care if I'm doing anything Google-related. I'm signing up and going just on the hope that the swag I get will completely offset my ticket and travel costs.
Right?
That's getting a little insane.
It is a little insane.
I love it. I mean,
it is. It's giving your devs some love.
Which is great because lately, both Microsoft and Apple have been doing, especially Apple, have been giving their devs hate instead of love. And now Google is coming out and saying, you know, here's your toys, here's your goodies, here's your tools.
And I think,
go play.
I
love that.
I mean, wow. So let's just talk about some of the things that they covered for Android, because that affects the Linux audience
stuff.
The biggest.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into the WebMVP 8 stuff.
Yeah.
They really showcased Android 2.2 Froyo. We already knew most of the details on this. A couple of bits came out. We had talked about the speed improvements. Realistically, people are saying 5 to 6x speed improvement, 5 to 6 times. And so how did they do that? Or I'm sorry, 3 to 6 times. How did they do that? Well, I guess they replaced their Java runtime with a just-in-time compiler.
Thank God.
So it somehow takes Java bytecode.
It's a JIT compiler.
And I don't really understand how that makes a huge improvement, but people are saying it's legit.
No, okay.
Huge.
Okay, think about it like this. All right, a JIT compiler, just-in-time compiler, is just like a compiler on your desktop, right? So if you have a bit of C code and you compile it, and you compile it into your native code.
Right.
You run it, and then it's native, right?
But it seems like that overhead of having to compile it every time.
Here's the thing. Those applications are not that big, and you can do incremental JIT compilation. So if you look at most Android applications, they are highly modular. So that's one of the cool bits about Android development is you develop, you know, each little screen or little services, and you make them very, very modular. Well, you just have to JIT compile each one as needed. Once it's JIT compiled, it's ready to rock
and
roll.
Well, I noticed they gave a preview of Google TV, and they loaded Android apps onto the Google TV, and they rendered funky, but they were
stretched.
It wasn't like on the iPhone.
Well, no, it was. They resized the thing. It's like
their SVG images or something, and they just
But
it's not like on the iPad where they pixel double.
No. It's not zoomed in or anything like that.
Right.
No. It's just like you'd be running a desktop application. When you set up your Android applications, you say, okay, you have like a text field, and you pin it to the window. You say, okay, it's attached to the left side, the top side, and the right side, and it's going to stretch with it.
Okay.
And then as you get a bigger screen, it works great. That's why applications work well across the different Android devices already.
Yeah.
So it's just a necessary bit of Android development because there's no standard screen size.
So speed improvements alone are pretty awesome, and we already knew about that, and that's really kind of, I think, the thing that stole the headlines at first.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff that I think came out more clearly at Google I/O for Android that really is showing Google isn't just going after the iPhone. They're at full battle mode now. They're not just putting out a competitive product. They're going for blood.
They're taking them out.
One thing I really am excited about is the push to phone option for users. So it's going to be contextually aware. So they'll have like an extension in Google Chrome where if you find a URL, you can click a button. It'll send it from Google Chrome to your Android phone.
Yeah.
And the Android phone will know, okay, this is a web URL. I need to open the web browser. Oh, this is a map URL. I need to map it for them.
That's pretty cool.
And they're going to open this up. So you'll be able to send over the air different stuff via. So you know, like the iPhone has a push service, but it's completely blocked off to end users. I'd love to be. There actually is a way to push through MobileMe, but generally it's
not like this.
Yeah, and that is fantastic. It's a little convenience thing. I think is going to be huge. We already knew about the Wi-Fi tethering. That's neat. Yeah,
that's great to be able to tether your Wi-Fi.
I think most carriers are going to charge.
Oh, dude.
The whole concept here is one single checkbox, and then a few seconds later, your Android phone has now turned into a 3G router that shares out your 3G connection over your Wi-Fi. So you can have several devices. Actually, I think it's up to like, I think it's over the numbers over 20. You can have over 20 devices that'll be able to connect to your Android phone and share it out. Sprint's already enabled this on one of their phones, and they charge $30 fee per month, which is about half of what one of their data plans cost to do this. That's neat.
That's actually, that's one of, so I was using an iPhone for a while, and I felt bad about it. I felt dirty inside. I'm going to be honest with everybody.
Sure, you got a little.
I felt super, super dirty. So I sold my iPhone. Great thing. Sold my iPhone for more than I bought it for.
Nice.
I'm going to say two words to people who are buying iPhones right now, especially like that. Suckers. So I went back to this old phone I've got, this old Windows mobile phone. I know. It's an old Windows mobile phone. But that's the coolest thing about it is that it can take 3G signal, turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot. So now I'm looking over at this. And I'm like, okay, now if they have this built into
Android
and it works right. And I'm using a third-party application.
That PDA net?
No, it's a Windows mobile Wi-Fi router.
I have PDA net on my Droid that does the same thing now.
Does it work pretty good?
Yeah.
See, I love that, you know, because I'll have my tablet or my DS
or battery on the Droid goes like that.
Oh, the same problem with that thing. Actually, this thing, it's awesome. Heats up like a stone sit. It's been sitting in the oven all day.
You can cook a little food on that thing.
You can cook food on this thing.
Flip it over while you're using it.
It lasts for like an hour like that. So I've got to plug
it
in. So, but it's great. So I can have my laptop and my Nokia tablet and everything
else.
And
anyone that has an Android phone now, if they want to go through the trouble of, it's not actually that much trouble. If you want to root your phone, you can turn that on
now. You can get that now.
But
the fact that it'd be supported and theoretically maybe work a little better.
The idea that the company's like, yeah, we could do this. This is pretty wild. Google really, really, really stressed their open nature, blah, 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 and this. But you know what?
Yeah.
You could sit there and you can say, we're open, we're the good guys, we're not evil. But this kind of stuff actually
says,
do speak louder than words.
Yeah, yeah.
And giving consumers control. Also, did you notice they also are going to be offering a online Android app store? I can do this now with AppBrain, but it's not as automatic.
Yep.
With the future online app store for the Android phones, you're going to be able to browse through there, and then you'll be able to send, through the same push technology they're using to send URLs and map links, you're going to be able to send applications straight to your phone.
Awesome.
Really cool.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. And then they're introducing also a always-on cloud backup service for your applications data, if you want it.
Nice.
I'm really curious to see how the new Android version does with battery life, because all of these Android phones are just tanking. They're just tanking with the battery life.
Now, theoretically, the JIT compiler that they're adding into it could improve it as well.
Yeah, because it has to do less work?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But we'll see.
I could see that. Also, just overall, some new changes. If you have a Nexus One, you can already get this update.
I want to point out something here. If you've got a Google phone that's going to support the new version of the new OS, this new 2.2, if you're gonna be able to run Froyo, you're gonna be able to take the current phone you have and run it 2 to 4 times faster. Whereas if you have an iPhone, just to be clear, the next version of the OS that's coming out in a couple of months will actually be slower than what you have now, and you're not gonna
get all of the
features.
Could be your phone where you're not even able to run the new OS. You know? And that's
true. Yeah.
I mean, that's what's different, that I think that's where Microsoft really, really screwed the pooch. And Google has this problem too. They have a little more control over it, but I don't have to technically get 2.2 Froyo. There's nothing that says I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Verizon and Motorola might just decide too much work. We've already released one update. We're not going to do it.
Right.
Microsoft clearly states that it's up solely to the carrier.
Yep.
Now, there's just like with the Windows Mobile phone, in fact, probably even more so for the Android, there's a whole community around replacement ROMs. So you could find ROMs for your phone. And I can find ROMs for my... In fact, I'm running one on my Droid now. But if you buy... It's interesting. If you buy the premier Google phone, like the Nexus One, Froyo is already out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
When you have Apple and you have Microsoft, who both came out and said, like, in a year, we're going to have this new phone OS.
Yeah.
Or in Apple's case, in 6 months. And a Microsoft, sometime in the winter. And Google's like, yeah, here's our new OS. If you bought a Nexus One, you can start working on it today.
Right.
Blows my mind.
It's a big difference between the other two carriers.
Talk about going from 2.1 to 2.2. There is no other phone OS manufacturer that would have called this a point release. Nobody else would have said...
No, they would have said, this is version 5.
You've got
X.
Push applications.
This is Android X.
Push notification.
Yeah.
Did you notice they're also going to be doing Wi-Fi iTunes syncing? So you can sync wirelessly with... Apple doesn't even have that. with the iPhone.
No.
And Zoom doesn't have that.
No.
With the whatever they have. It's crazy that nobody's doing Wi-Fi syncing until...
The new version of Windows Mobile will.
Will.
But doesn't yet and won't until the end of the year. So, yeah.
This is nuts to me. And this is just wild that this company, this search engine company, is coming out of nowhere and making the premier smartphone platform. Because it's all these features. It's a brand that they redid their browser. It's just all these things. And they're calling it, oh, yeah, this is 2.1 to 2.2. What? Really? What the hell does it take to get to 3.0?
Seriously.
Seriously. Wild. But, all right. Interesting. And now I have nothing to say about Google TV other than it looked like a flop product to me.
Oh, yeah. So Google TV is just basically a set-top box running Android that sits in between your cable box or your satellite DirecTV box.
I would rather just use...
Or Dish TV, Dish Network box, I guess is what they were demoing. And adds like internet search on top of your stream.
I don't know about it. I've got XBMC, I've got Boxy, I don't get it.
I don't get it. Yeah, and honestly, look and feel wise and feature wise, I'd rather have a Boxy box.
Yeah, it did not look that great.
I'm looking at it.
Or Roku, like
the one
like
cool
MOSFET
bit
says in the chat room, Roku FTW.
Yeah, the Roku would be awesome. But the one cool bit was that you could run your Android applications on your television.
I really did dig that.
So that's kind of cool. I mean, that's kind of now if you do have a lot of Android games coming out. For a games developer, you'd be looking at that going, you know what? That's kind of cool.
Especially if there's
3D
acceleration.
So I'm going on the phone. I'm going on the set-top box.
And because it is Java-based, am I right that this is the first Android, like, official shipping Google Android-supported product that's going to be on an Atom Intel x86 CPU.
It doesn't matter, though.
Doesn't matter.
No, none of it matters.
So is your codelating along, you don't really give an F.
Codelating. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right, Chris.
Yeah, okay.
As you are codelating... and then you've codelated, and then you've concatenated your codelation into one coda bucket.
Right.
You put it in the coda bucket, and then boom.
The coda bucket takes care of it.
You Google-ed it.
Now, there's always the Skynet aspect of this, because...
Dude, is there ever.
Google on your phone, Google on your TV, Google on your computer.
Oh, man.
There's basically...
Robots will kill you!
Google phone and a Google TV, and you have a computer... essentially, Google knows everything. All you need is a Google bed.
Yeah.
And I would say get a Google car, except for you've already got a Google phone with a GPS chip in it that's always checking in with Google.
Well, they did show a fair bit. Was that the first keynote day? They showed a lot of cars running Android in the in-dash navigation
they did. You're
system.
Right.
Yeah.
Is Android going to be desktop Linux? Is it going to be like...
It's not going to be desktop Linux. It's going to be everything else Linux.
Android's going to
be
like
your phones, your set-tops, your cars,
your
everything.
I think it's going to be the number 2 OS very soon.
Dude, easy.
If you got it on phones, you got
Ridiculous.
It on TVs, you got it on
Ridiculous.
Cars, who even knows what else they're going to come out with? I mean, it's...
I just with the... And then I...
My mind is blown.
And then when I stand up, I'm like, whoa, where the...
Head
and
rush.
Then I sit down.
Whoa, Google.
I sit down for a second.
All right, so the other really big thing, this came from day one of the Google Week, WebM, which is
Google Week.
VP8. Now, VP8 is a video codec. That shares some in history probably with VP3. Now, that's an assumption on my part. I haven't looked. But VP3 and VP8 were originally made by Onto. VP3 is what Ogg Theor is based off of.
Yep.
VP8 is much closer to H.264 format. Now, I'm sure everyone out there is aware of the whole HTML5 video controversy where people are really pushing for... You've got Mozilla who's pushing for Ogg Theor as the online video standard.
Yep.
And you've got Microsoft... And Apple and a lot of other companies are pushing for H.264 as the web video standard.
Yep.
Now Google came along and said, "Boom! Here's our Wang on the table. VP8."
And their whole thing with VP8 is not encumbered by licenses.
Yeah.
So theoretically, we as Jupiter Broadcasting could put all of our video content out in VP8 HTML5, and theoretically, no one's going to sue us for it.
Right. And
Not getting sued for putting out video content.
Opera is going to ship a browser with built-in VPA support.
Yep.
The nightly builds of Chrome already have VPA support. Microsoft will support VPA via, as long as you have a codec, via a codec on your overall Windows computer, you'll be able to play it in the browser in Internet Explorer. Obviously, Firefox is on board with VP8. Haven't heard anything from Apple, though, as long as you can make a QuickTime component, it'll play on Safari. It's not an issue. I don't even know why people even mention it. It's the same as IE. But what we have heard from is a couple of developers on the X264 project, which is an open source alternative to H.264.
Right.
Now, these guys went through and looked at the VP8 codec, and, you know, they actually were pretty displeased.
Dude, they but were hard on it.
I read between the lines, and I just saw where I saw like where they said was total catastrophe. I saw, okay, you know, needs time to mature.
Yeah.
I didn't see like this is a deal breaker. I saw it needs time to have a few improvements. One of the arguments that's been made is that VP8 is so closely matching H.264 that it is actually closer than VC1 was, which was Microsoft. Microsoft tried to do the same thing with VC1.
Right.
Microsoft tried to come out and say VC1 is going to be this open video codec that we've developed. Yeah, you can wrap it in Windows Media if you want, but you could also wrap it in an MP4 file.
Right.
They got sued. They got sued because it was too closely matching H.264. So Microsoft had to close it up and then go through royalties licensing because they had to buy licensing for it.
Right.
Supposedly, this WebM VP8 more closely matches H.264 than VC1 even did.
Really?
So there is some concern there. Though it's Google, and Google could just buy everybody.
You know, see, what I mean? This is kind of where I'm thinking here. Now
Google's like crazy like a fox like
here,
that.
Here, let me ask you this. If we went ahead and released VP8 HTML5 for everything, we just said, okay, this is where we're going for video. This is it. Boom. Here is the option.
Right.
Runs on everything. Great.
Yeah.
Now, if we did that, and suddenly this big consortium of Apple and a couple other firms were like, we want to sue you because we hate freedom, which they do that a lot. So they start going after people. They're going to be going after Google. Because it's Google's standard. We're using Google's technology.
Here's the thing.
And it's Google's license that sells we can use it freely, right?
It depends on what the courts decide. So if they decide it is in full violation of the H.264 patent, then we're essentially using a knockoff of H.264, we are actually liable. Ironically, my understanding of it is the only codec we can release in today and not be in potential violation of patents is H.264 because it's been cleared until 2015 or something like that, 2014.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be supposedly some sort of royalties potentially. But Ogg Theora we could be using today, which we do release in Ogg Theora.
We do.
But there's more and more noise about that being potentially patent infringing.
Plus,
and the way the law works is
nobody uses it.
If you distribute,
it drives me crazy.
If you distribute, regardless of who provided you with that, if you distribute it and you encode the videos yourself, because we would be doing the encoding, we are therefore doing the patent violating ourselves.
Doesn't
that suck?
That sucks.
Now, that said, I think Google could come in and just write a big Fatty McFatterson check and just say, here you go, and shut up and go away. Because for Google, it is more important from a revenue standpoint that web video take off.
See,
it's even more important that it be their code.
They've got YouTube. They have to ensure that, I mean, they own video on the internet.
I think that's a big reason why they even did Google TV is because I think YouTube probably has hit a ceiling, and the only way they can get more eyes is to put it on TV.
Just put it on television.
Yeah.
And in order to do that past, 2014, 2015, when things start getting a little murkier, is to make sure that they own outright a free codec that they can have all of their users use.
Mm-hmm.
So my hope is you guys know me. You guys know I'm not a quick hitch my wagon to the Google cart kind of guy. That's just not my way.
Yeah.
But looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, Google obviously has a vested interest.
And
in
they claim
sure
they've reviewed WebM. They claim they reviewed it top to bottom, and they have determined it doesn't violate any patents. But of course, that's what they want to see.
Well, that's what they want to see. But come on, I mean, they don't want to open themselves up to lawsuits.
Right.
They just want it to work. If this isn't going to work, then they're going to find something else that will. Because they've got the money, they've got the resources to do it, and they've got the motivation.
Yep.
So I agree with you. If it does come down to it, and like the MPEG LA or whatnot comes after them, and Apple comes after them, and all these other people come after them, they're just going to friggin' buy all of them.
I think so.
I think Google can buy all of them in pocket change right now.
Well, the difficulty is that the MPALA, whatever it is, that holds the licensing is like 30 companies.
Yeah.
So you can't buy all of them because some of those 30 companies are Microsoft and Apple.
True, yeah.
But you could write a massive
check.
Licensing check.
That says anyone using this derivative codec is good to go.
I mean, it's so obvious the patent system's broken. That's a totally different Linux Action Show episode. But geez, I'm not 100% on WebM. I think it needs a little time to mature, but it's now the one that I'm most excited about.
Now, on the time to mature thing, now from the technological standpoint, I know there's some concerns about it being not as efficient as some of the other codecs available.
Especially
in HD, like.
But
you
bugs
know what?
Me.
You know
bugs
what though?
Me.
You know what though? I don't care.
But we put out in HD.
At this point, yeah, that's great. That's great. I don't care if it's a little bigger. I don't care if it hogs the CPU down a little bit more. Well, here's the reality is like
right now, sometimes we can't even put Linux Action Show out because it gets so big.
It does.
So we can't. We don't have any room to get any bigger.
But you know what? I don't want to.
I think through efficiency, through efficiency, that'll take care of itself.
It'll get better.
And it's got a few years until H.264 comes a knocking, and maybe in that time it can get to be where it's at.
Yeah.
It takes higher CPU to decode. It is not as tight of a codec. It doesn't quite get those numbers down, but it's great. It's, you know what's interesting, actually? I was going to say it's better than Theor is what I was about to say.
Yeah.
It's way better than Theor. And it's interesting now to see, especially this really pisses me off from the Mozilla Foundation, coming out now and essentially just trash-talking Theor. They're just like, oh, yeah, well, this is substantially better than Theor. Well, then really? Then how come for the last umpteen years you've not gotten out of my face about Theor? And every time I've stood up and I've said, guys, I don't think Theor is the way to go. It's just not that good of a codec. And everybody's been like, oh, shut up, guys. Shut up. It's fine. It's good enough. And besides, have you seen that if you add this flag when you compile the encoder, it's much better. Of course, it's not the spec. And now...
And it doesn't run on any device.
And now that WebM's out, they're like, oh, yeah, oh, man. Yeah, Theora is just, Theora is just not the codec for today. Ooh. We need something for today.
Related note, the container format kind of interested me. It's MKVs.
Yeah, that is the Mistral, which if you've maybe downloaded some high-definition shows online, TV, movies.
From the internet, perhaps.
You might have noticed the MKV format before.
It's been getting popular.
The other area where I think WebM needs to mature is in device support, because right now every device out there has an H.264 DSP decoding chip.
Yep, that's what it really comes down to.
But so if we this need to really get is close enough,
a nice little decoding chip,
if,
and then
if this is really that close to H.264,
retool it a little bit and good to go.
And supposedly, like phones with the Snapdragon and the newer CPUs that are coming to the smartphones already have the facilities that WebM needs to do accelerated decoding.
So, could be good to go.
It's not going to be as long as some people think for WebM hardware level playback. And then once you hit that, that really is where you start talking about decreased battery usage. I mean, you really start saving on power and CPU.
You bet your bananas that the current shipping crop of Android phones, a good chunk of them are going to end up having really great accelerated playback.
So WebM.
This kind of interested me. This was actually one of the more interesting bits of the whole thing
for me.
Personally,
I mean, we kind of had wind it was coming.
Yeah,
but they launched it, but they launched it right. They launched it with momentum. They didn't just put it out there and then it was like, okay, go ahead and do something with it. They launched it with partners. They launched it with encoders. They launched it with real world support. They're already converting the entire YouTube library. Well,
to this.
At least the current YouTube library, which I cannot imagine.
Dude, that's so much space.
Like, they must have to use a large Hadron collider to power those computers to re-encode all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I would use.
Right?
I would use the large Hadron collider.
You have to smash particles to generate energy. It's also how you make starships travel through space.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to write in about why Chris fundamentally insulted every piece of science on the planet, do so at chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com.
The chat room wants to know, Brian, what do we think of the fact
that they... CC me so I can giggle.
They want to know what we think about the fact that they licensed WebM in the BSD license.
Love it.
I think that's great, too.
You know what the BSD license is, Chris?
Whatever you want, really.
Freedom.
Yeah, it's really you know what I like about freedom?
You know what I like?
What?
I like that it's free.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Freedom is free.
Yeah.
So, really cool news from Google. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on it. So, hit us up. Go over to JupiterColony.com and let us know what you think.
Boom.
All right, Brian. Last week, we reviewed Fedora 13. We've got some feedback, we'll call it.
We do.
On that. Before we go on, I did want to mention, just because I wanted to give you a little plug here.
Okay.
Illumination Software Creator, your latest project, is only going to be in beta for a little bit longer. So people want to get in on the beta. Also, there's a discounted price there. Head over to, would you want them to go to lunduke.com or radicalbreeze.com?
You can go to radicalbreeze.com if you want to look at the beta notes, each release notes. I post over at lunduke.com, so you can kind of get a little more in-depth feeling on it. There's also a forum that's up and running right now, radicalbreeze.com/forum. Cool. If you want to just talk with other people using Illumination, send me bug reports, send me feature requests and wish lists. We got a very long wish list thread that's already forming in there.
Right on.
You guys are awesome. Very cool communities already quickly forming around this thing. It's still in beta. It's going to, the final 1.0 is coming in just a couple of days.
That's exciting.
So if you want the super cheapy, because I love you guys, sort of discount, go over.
Beta
get
time.
It, get it now.
Get it while it's beta.
For RadicalBreeze.com. The full 1.0 supports developing desktop Linux apps and desktop Windows apps, as well as MAMO internet tablet apps. And there are more platforms coming.
Very fun.
Very exciting times for everyone involved.
That is
exciting.
It actually really is exciting because you've been talking about this for a very long time. Dude, and now it's finally almost here.
It's going great.
That's really cool.
I could not be more pleased. When I initially announced the 1.0 of this, the original idea was, okay, here's a set of features, you know, here's some blocks you can make applications with, and we're going to ship with, you know, Python desktop and Python MAMO and a web. Well, we've put the web part on hold.
Okay.
We put it on hold for until after 1.0 ships. It's going to be like a 1.1 update sort of thing. Because we got so much feedback from people on things they wanted in the IDE. They're like, you know, we want
for
to be able to
stuff.
Do... Yeah, they yeah. they wanted they,
sense,
they
right?
realized after they started making kind of bigger apps that they wanted like a lot of convenience features. And so we spend a lot of time adding in things like default variable creation and just things to make it easier to create apps. So
cool, dude.
So we decided we'll just focus on that, and then we'll add in the official web support. But anyway, go ahead over to RadicalBreeze.com if you want to check it out.
Cool. All right.
Let's talk about Fedora.
So Fedora 13 we reviewed on the last episode of the Linux Action Show, and I think our general take was is that it had some nice strength under the hood, but we thought we had a couple of issues. Now, I had a chance to chat with a lot of people, and I know you did as well, right?
A lot of people, yeah.
And basically,
people have opinions.
They do, and I think unanimously, I'm just going to start by saying people really thought that we should give the photo management program another shot. So I will.
I did. I got a lot of feedback that we needed to have Shotwell give that another shot.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I have a hard time saying Shotwell. I always want to say show and tell. Mm. Don't know what that is.
I forgot what I was calling it last time.
You were calling it show and tell.
Oh, was I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
But you're welcome.
It's almost the same word. You just jumble around the letters and add a few, and boom, same word. So I gave it another chance.
Okay.
It's not good.
Really? A lot of people liked it. I mean, that's probably the number one thing I got back.
Once I added in a ton of pictures.
I haven't tried it yet. I'm still going to try it.
Give it a try, because it's not terrible.
Okay.
And it has potential. It could be awesome. But right now, it's totally not usable.
Not there yet.
I mean, come on. If you're actually using it for day-to-day organization of your photos, not going to work. It's not going to work. If you claim to be using it for your day-to-day photo management, you're absolutely either A, lying through your teeth.
Really?
Or B, deluding yourself into actually being productive.
Do you think it's that bad?
It's not bad. It's just not finished. And it's so not finished. It's like...
Okay, I see
it's
what you're
like,
saying. I see what you're saying.
Like, as a good example. So I released Illumination.
Right.
Beta 1
right.
was very much beta. Crazy beta. It was super beta. And it was very, very cool and showed promise. But you're not going to do day-to-day production in it. By beta 6 in the final 1.0 is great.
Sure.
Shotwell is at beta 1. It's cool. It's worth checking out. But it's not there yet. It's not shipping yet.
Hmm. Okay. I guess their challenge would be that the Linux desktop's always kind of in a state of moving forward. And so you just kind of take a snapshot in time and ship with something. Where you have the difficulty there is if
you already have something that works.
Yeah, exactly.
Why ditch it for something else?
Yeah.
I love the idea. Now, some people have talked about the next Ubuntu release actually shipping with Shotwell,
mm-hmm.
And I'm totally fine with that if Shotwell's ready in time for the next Ubuntu
and
release.
It's possible that,
and it might be.
Yeah,
it's moving fast. It looks like a cool project. It might be awesome. So I'm totally okay with it. If it gets there. However, it was not there for this Fedora release.
Right.
I'm not buying the excuse that people say it's really cool and I need to just give it a second chance. I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. I will give it a shot, but I'm a little more nervous based on your...
It's not that good. It's just not that good.
Oh, man.
Not yet.
Oh, man,
not
Brian.
Yet.
Okay. All right, so that was probably, I think, unanimously the area we got the most feedback. And a lot of people also wanted to make sure we understood that ButterFS was not available on the Live City, which
we figured that out pretty
quick. Show,
yeah, we actually talked about it ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just disappointed.
I'm looking at screenshots of Shotwell. It looks like a pretty good.
It looks okay, but Shotwell looks a lot like a standard file manager. It looks more like a file manager than a photo manager.
Right. I felt that about Picasa too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's missing some things that I need in a good photo manager, so it's just not ready yet.
Okay.
That's fine. It's not a big deal.
Another aspect that we got a lot of feedback for was that we had an expectation of Fedora 13 that it should be a desktop Linux user's OS, and that's not fair because that's not Fedora's target audience. In fact, they have a wiki article up on their site that clearly states that their target audience is power users. People that are comfortable with Linux, developers, open source enthusiasts, things like that. And that the expectation that maybe we would have reviewed something based on the fact that perhaps this was the first time somebody has seen this isn't really necessarily a fair one.
And we actually talked about it during our review. we talked about this exact topic.
Yeah.
And what kind of bummed me out a little bit was I feel like people watched our review, they listened to it, and they only heard a few things that they wanted to hear. I found that kind of annoying. I
felt like there was some cherry picking too of the topics.
Yeah, there absolutely was.
Yeah, yeah.
It of course. Now Shotwell's a great example. We talked about how Shotwell was just not ready for use. And people assumed, oh, well, you're thinking of it from a standard consumer desktop user point of view.
Right.
Like, no, I'm not. I'm thinking it from my point of view. A guy who develops software on Linux, a guy who's installs a new Linux distro every 3.5 seconds, I'd probably consider myself pretty firmly in the camp of who Fedora is claiming to go for.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And yet I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, it's fine. There's a lot of things to like about
Fedora.
There's
some polish
Fedora
missing, though, in some areas. And I think sometimes that happens because they're trying to push forward with new applications to get them into the people's hands, to get them more mature. But I think Fedora, and they've said as much, they... to be fair to the Fedora team and Raul especially,
Raul.
He's reached out to us every time we do one of these with very articulate, very well thought out responses. And so I wanted to say thank you. And those are available on the Fedora marketing list if you'd like to see those discussions that we've had with him.
Yep,
they are out in the public. And his contention, and I think probably the Fedora 13's argument here, isn't really that. It's a valid argument because they're clearly targeting these power users, and because they have a wiki page, we should all just know that. The issue, you know, putting something up on a wiki that states who you're targeting is kind of disingenuous in one way. And I don't mean like you're intentionally deceiving.
And to be clear, to find that wiki page, you pretty much have to ask someone who wrote the wiki page to send you the wiki page.
And
it's hard to find.
If I'm trying out, if I've heard of desktop Linux, but I don't really know much about it, I work at a company that has Red Hat servers, so I know Red Hat's involved with Linux, and if I have Red Hat servers, I should probably learn Red Hat on the desktop. So I'll go check out what Red Hat has to offer on the desktop, and eventually through a series of Googling, I will find Fedora, and then from Fedora, I will install desktop Linux.
Perfect.
I'm never going to go to a wiki page and check to see if I'm their target audience. Oh, I better go check who their user base page is or what it says on the user base page before I install this. I'm not even going to know such a thing exists. We did look at now. Can you make the argument it's not fair for us to review Fedora in the perspective of a new user? Perhaps, but we believe that the reality of the situation out there is that people are coming to Fedora for the first time. And if they have a bad impression with Fedora, they have a bad impression with desktop Linux as a whole.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's our concern.
I want to make
maybe we're wrong. Maybe Ubuntu. No. Maybe Ubuntu's gotten so big that they're making Fedora irrelevant as the new user's distro. And
I mean, they are bigger. I mean, Ubuntu is bigger than Fedora right now in terms of usage. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anyone in their right mind would contend otherwise. But you know, still, the phrase Red Hat and Linux go hand in hand.
I think Fedora contends. Remember when Ubuntu said we have 18 million users and Fedora came out and said we have... Or Ubuntu said we have 11 million users and Fedora came out so we had 18 million. Like they...
Yeah.
Right. I am worried because... And I'm just going to be totally blunt about this with everyone. The more and more I talk to people through my day job out in the real world, the more and more there's a message of Linux isn't ready.
Yeah.
Linux isn't for normal users. Linux isn't for desktop use. And it's spreading. It's not reducing. Like I thought by this point...
It should be.
Like I remember when Vista came out about a year and a half, even 6 months into Vista's release, the Mac buzz was on fire. Like
it was
people
crazy.
Were, I've heard of the, you know, I'm thinking about my next computer, maybe
I'm
buying a Mac.
I'm thinking about buying a Mac.
I've heard really good things about the Macs.
Mac.
And I thought,
Justin Long really likes Macs.
Right. I thought, all right, so this will be, the Mac is going to have its moment for a couple of years, and then people are going to also start talking about, well, I've got Vista and I don't want to go to Windows 7, so I'm going to get Linux. And I thought maybe that would be Linux's kind of moment.
I was hoping.
And what I'm hearing is well, you know, I've heard Linux is really hard to use and I heard the applications aren't that good.
Now, and you know where they get that impression? Right here.
I don't know.
Fedora.
I don't know if it's all Fedora's fault, but I'm worried that maybe it's something we need to be considering, that we have to think about, well, where are people getting these first impressions from? Where are these people writing these magazine articles from? What are they trying? Well, they're probably trying what in their mind is the premier Linux distributor's desktop OS.
Yep.
They are the premier Linux provider. They make their money selling Linux, so they the best Linux desktop offering. I'm going to go try it.
Makes sense.
And then you try it, and if something's not totally done... Now, this sucks for Fedora, because what we're essentially saying is, oh, Fedora, you shouldn't have the ability to experiment and do whatever you want. You should have to be locked down. Maybe they could have a stable version and a rawhide version that's always in the... I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it just doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And here's the other flip side of the coin is, when we come out and review... I'll try and use my words, inside my mouth correctly today. Yeah. When we review Fedora, every time we review Fedora, people come out and say, you're reviewing it wrong. Stop reviewing it like that. You can't review that. You did it wrong. Not that we were wrong in our review. Not that they disagreed with the points we made, but that we reviewed it wrong every single time. And we've reviewed a lot of different aspects of Fedora. At this point, I'm not sure how to review it differently even further. Now, when we review Ubuntu and we're like, man, this thing is orange. People from Ubuntu come out and Canonical say, wow, yep, it is kind of too orange, huh? When we review OpenSUSE, and let's be honest, we've harshed on OpenSUSE in the past. It's got great points and it's got bad points, but we've harshed on it. Mm-hmm. The OpenSUSE users come back and they either agree with us or disagree with us, but they don't say we reviewed it wrong. They man up and they either take the criticism or they disagree with it and they articulate why they chose what they chose.
Well, I think Fedora's done a good job of articulating what we've reached is a disagreement on...
what Linux is?
On at least some of the rules to the playing field. We're saying, you know, you're not winning at the game because you're not playing the game right, and they're saying, you know, you're scoring the wrong game, is what their argument is.
Yeah, they're saying that we're playing soccer instead of football or something like that.
Right. But I believe that they actually are in a football game. They just don't know it. You know what my point is? I believe they're playing the game.
They're a bunch of rugby players. They got really, really drunk. Yeah. And rugby's a great game.
And now they're playing naked mud wrestling, but they still think they're playing rugby.
Which, by the way, that sounds hilarious. And I think we really should just be looking at it from that point of view from now on.
I don't know. I love trying Fedora for the virtualization improvements. I love seeing where SE Linux is at. I do really dig all that. But at the same time, I've just been talking to so many people lately that have had bad Linux experiences. Yeah. And it often has been Fedora. And I don't know how to say that nicer. And I thought about it this way. All right. If you had to give the CEO of HP Computers one disk of Linux...
Oh, dude,
and
you it's said, not Fedora.
We want you to build HP computers and ship to mass consumers to Costco HP Linux computers. You wouldn't give him and he'd never seen Linux before. You wouldn't give him a Fedora DVD.
And here's the thing. HP already made that decision. It was Ubuntu.
Yeah, I know.
Dell already made that decision. It was Ubuntu. Most minor, small mom-and-pop shops have made that decision. For the most part, it's Ubuntu.
I don't think like Fedora is harming Linux... within some great way, but I think that there's potentially hurting the perception.
From a PR standpoint?
Possibly.
They're doing a craptastic job. From a technology perspective, doing awesome. Rocking the charts. Love the work they're doing. I love it.
I think they really have us, like the market of geeks and Linux enthusiasts and open source enthusiasts, nailed.
Yeah.
I think they understand us through and through. I truly believe they are fundamentally lost when it comes to communicating to new users. I believe the wiki stuff that they, you know, the user base, the scary codec warning message that they have fixed, telling users to go Google it. These are examples of truly not understanding the needs of new users.
No.
And really, if we can't show people where the Linux community, how we're community supported, how we embrace new users, how we show them how to do things, if we can't demonstrate that, then we are reinforcing that you can't use an operating system unless there's a 1-800 number attached to it.
Yep, that's what it is.
And that's no good.
There you go.
That's that.
That's all I got to say on that matter.
All right, Brian. Well, and thank you again to the Fedora people. And if the conversation continues, I strongly recommend, if you're interested, head over to the Fedora marketing list, and you can read the thread in public there.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. I want to thank everyone for stopping by.
All of you.
For talking to us. For us talking to you.
Yeah. And you know,
other types of conversations. You can have different combinations therein.
Absolutely. And we wanted to say, we've got these lovely shirts at store.jupiterbroadcasting.com that have Linux Action Show apparel. There's also lots of other things.
You can buy all sorts of
if
stuff
if you'd like
there.
To support the show, you it's can go awesome. To store.jupiterbroadcasting.com.
We get like a little sliver of yeah. stuff.
And we thank everybody there. That does that for us.
Awesome.
I just have been eyeballing a new keyboard recently, and I went ahead and pulled the trigger, and I got it through our store. So that's pretty cool.
Nice job.
Thank you. Thank
nice
you.
Freaking job.
So I guess next week it's we're going to have upcoming soon the OpenSUSE review, but we've got a little bit of time, right?
We do.
So we thought it's time for a Linux Action Show gaming special.
Yep. So we're going to do games next week.
Yeah, but it's going to be the gaming edition of the Linux Action Show.
What I would love to hear from you guys is what has got you excited on the gaming front.
You
got to
get it into us quick. So maybe in the thread
you got like,
for this episode
you got
or
like
in the comments.
2 or 3 days. If you don't have it in by like Wednesday, we're not going to have time to play the stuff and really dive into it deep.
Totally.
So hop on over to the forum, JupiterColony.com. Talk about it in there. We'll be scouring that forum for game news and game tidbits. And next week is game time.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to have me some fun playing some video games.
Damn straight.
All right. Well, that'll be next Sunday at JupiterBroadcasting.com. And until then, everyone, thanks so much for watching this episode of the Linux Action Show.
Later, everybody.